Hare Krishna, thank you for joining us this evening, and we are here to share some realizations, some findings from Sri Jaiva Dharma, which was authored by Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur, who is considered our seventh Goswami. So there was Srila Rupa Goswami and the other five Goswamis of Sri Vrindavan Dham 500 years back. They laid the foundation for Krishna consciousness. Srila Rupa Goswami was most qualified to lay the foundation because he understood and absorbed the instructions and the desire of Lord Chaitanya. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitamena Bhutale. So he practically could understand the intentions and the desires of Lord Chaitanya in his heart. What is in the heart of Lord Chaitanya? Who could understand the heart of Lord Chaitanya? Srila Rupa Goswami is such a confidential servant that he could understand the heart of Lord Chaitanya. And based on his realizations of being instructed by Lord Chaitanya, as well as having realizations from the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, he established our Siddhanta. In other words, we are basically Rupanugas. We are following in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. Now, there were five other acharyas who were with Srila Rupa Goswami, and their service was quite extraordinary. They sat under trees, completely free of any other occupation, and they chanted Harinam. So they chanted Harinam sitting under trees, different trees in Vrindavan, in the forest of Vrindavan 500 years back. And from such chanting, they developed realizations of the eternal seva to the divine couple Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. So if we are surviving today, we are surviving today because of the realizations of a few devotees who sincerely depended on Harinam. This is a very important point for us to embrace. Sincere dependence on Harinam of our predecessor acharyas gave birth to the Siddhanta, gave birth to the realizations. Those realizations are the most vast and intricate body of knowledge that we draw from. Srila Prabhupada drew heavily from the works of his predecessor acharyas. Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur drew heavily from the works of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So the point we want to make is the success of our mission depends on Harinam. The success of our mission depends on Namasmaran, Namakirtan. This is the most important anga in our bhakti. This is what we are dependent on. Every realization that we are basically being able to sustain ourselves, the realizations of our predecessors, realization of Srila Prabhupada, has come from Harinam. This is an extraordinarily important point which we want to understand, that they sat under trees and they chanted, and from those chanting, that chanting, the pure chanting of Harinam, realizations developed. This is the first point we want to establish. Now what we also want to understand is that Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur came in at a very complex point in the history of our movement. He came in at a time when Gaudiya Vaishnavism had collapsed in certain ways. At least it was externally collapsed. It was covered over. Externally it appeared it had been covered over. Lord Chaitanya, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he walked on this planet in 1486 through plus 50 years. For a few years, almost 50 years. And when Krishna himself is walking on the planet, and Lord Nityananda and his personal associates have descended, and they are bestowing mercy and they are distributing Harinam throughout Bharatvarsha in that particular point in time, you can imagine that in around 300 years after their departure, after their going back to the spiritual sky, it was covered over. Material energy was so powerful that it was covered over, and there was so much distortion that our Siddhanta was hidden. There was so much distortion, people couldn't understand who is a Vaishnav and who is pretending to be a Vaishnav. Who has real goals and who does not have real goals which Vaishnavs are supposed to have. There was so much confusion when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur descended. He could not have an authorized copy of Srimad Bhagavatam. Today, due to the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and of course modern technology, we have the entire scripture of our acharyas in a little phone. Yeah, I carry all the scriptures in a little phone. Everybody. Srila Prabhupada, predecessor acharyas, and then Prabhupada's followers. Whoever has ever written a book is in my little phone. Yeah? Those days, getting a copy of Srimad Bhagavatam was so difficult because all the copies were handwritten. One had to laboriously sit down and handwrite all the verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam and every other verse had to be handwritten, so there were not many copies available in the first place. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur with great difficulty obtained one copy, and he was able to use that copy. That copy was a translation by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So he directly drew a lot of principles and lot of realizations and lot of principles from Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur directly took a lot from Srila Rupa Goswami. Many of the principles that were taught to us by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur had connections and had direct sourcing to Srila Rupa Goswami's work. Where did Srila Rupa Goswami obtain his verses from? Srimad Bhagavatam. Everything that we do is sourced from Srimad Bhagavatam. These are realizations, commentaries, these are expansions, experiences. Everything has been derived from Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the source of everything that we do today. Everything, practically. But they had their realizations, they had their experiences. So we are going to talk about a few things today. What we want to talk about first is to establish the flow of this topic. The reason for us to choose Jaiva Dharma is because today's world, the devotees are not many devotees are temple based. Most of our devotees are congregation based. They are constantly in touch with material energy. When they are constantly in touch with material energy quite profoundly, they also have a tendency to establish identities in the world. When you are in touch with material energy, when you are working for a corporation, when you are working for an outside entity, that particular corporation, that particular establishment will give you a title, will give you duties, that becomes your identity. Based on the title, based on the duties, we start establishing our desires. Our boss who is sitting on top of us is going to dictate what you're going to do in the next year, the year after, a few years down the line. He may not be Krishna conscious, which is a challenge. He is going to establish our future through his realizations of what the company should do. And our congregations are directly in touch with material energy. So there is a great need for our congregations to understand the dangers of being fully absorbed externally and how to plan for such an existence. I was working for many, many years and I was also practicing Krishna consciousness. So I do have some exposure to the challenges of working in the corporate environment. I have challenges of how to practice Krishna consciousness while you're fully absorbed in your workplace, where you have people whom you're surrounded with who have no contact whatsoever either with Krishna consciousness or with Vedic theology. They have no connection whatsoever. So if you're going to be in touch with them, what is going to happen to your Krishna consciousness? How do you manage it? So Jaiva Dharma is all about Jiva, Jaiva Dharma. What is the Nitya Dharma? What is the eternal duty of a soul? How is it established? How do you protect it? And you should be also be able to distinguish what is external, what is eternal and what is temporary. That particular permanent versus impermanent has also got to be understood. These are dangerous times. These are dangerous times because material energy is quite intense, and each year passes, our involvement in material energy is going to increase simply to ensure that our families are being protected and they are able to take care of themselves. There are going to be many responsibilities. We are going to have congregational devotees come in, which is wonderful, but then they are going to have the challenges. So this is a whole system of to be able to distinguish duty, to be able to plan for duty based on avasiddhanta. How do you exist in a world in which you don't belong to this world? You are in the world, but you are not of the world. How do you exist here? This particular distinction has to become very clear in our hearts. And how do we plan for it? What is the process given by our acharyas? Everybody has faced it at some level or the other in the past too. This is not new. This is not new at all. So we're going to touch upon it. It has been touched upon quite extensively in the Bhagavad Gita. The challenge that I spoke of has been touched quite extensively by Krishna himself. Krishna touched upon this challenge. So Krishna's speaking in the Bhagavad Gita is completely relevant for millions of years, because this is going to happen again and again and again. So let's understand where we are going. First and foremost, let's understand what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita about the whole process of attaining a transcendental situation. Let us first hear from Arjun and Krishna for a few brief moments, and then what we will do is we will go into a few more verses from the Bhagavad Gita, we will give examples from Srimad Bhagavatam, we will touch upon Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti's work while we are doing that as well, and then we will also talk about what Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur wanted us to do from Jaiva Dharma. First and foremost, this is 2.54, Arjuna Uvacha. Stita prajnyasya kabasha, samadhistasya keshava, stita dehi kim prabeshita, kim ashita, rajeta kim. Arjuna said, O Krishna, what are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? How does he speak and what is his language? How does he sit and how does he walk? So Arjuna is asking him, what is the behavior of someone who has attained steady consciousness which is engaged in transcendence? What is the behavior? What is the prime symptom of such a person? He wants to understand from Krishna. Krishna's answer is in the next verse. 2.55. This is very basic, but it is very profound. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Prajahati yada kaman, sarvan partha manogatan, atmani evatmana tushtaha, stita prajnyas tadochite. The Supreme Personality of God had said, O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification which arise from mental concoction, and when his mind thus purified finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. What does this mean? Krishna is saying, when someone stops mental concoction. What is mental concoction? When does it occur? When does the mind accept and reject, accept and reject, accept and reject? What is the mind state of accepting, rejecting? Sankalpa, vikalpa, sankalpa, vikalpa. Accept a certain prospect. Oh, this is not good. Let me change. Reject it, accept, reject. Krishna is saying, when that mental concoction stops, then one is merged in transcendence. So what exactly is Krishna talking about when he is saying that there is mental concoction? At what level does a devotee experience mental concoction? What is mental concoction? Why does it happen? Have you faced mental concoction? I'm not going to ask for a show of hands. Have you faced mental concoction? Has your mind been unsteady? Have you been agitated, not knowing what to accept, what to reject? Have you taken something which was thrown away some time back? Have you thrown away something which was actually, taken very seriously a few months back or a few years back? Have you done this particular accepting, rejecting? It happens all the time. The mind makes us think a specific temple, a specific sangha is good. After a few months, the mind tells us, change the temple. This sangha is bad. You will do better in some other sangha. Yeah, this is the mind. Sometimes the mind tells us, this job is good. Take it up, take it up, take it up. It will make you run towards the job. And after a few months of experiencing little hardship, the mind says, no, no, no. Let's move away. This is not working for us. Vikalpa. Relationships. This woman or this man is very good. And after some time, no, it is not good. Let's just make a change. Because if you change all of this, you will be able to chant better. Yeah? Somehow the mind is convincing us that making changes externally and throwing away and accepting things in our life is going to help us do better. This is mental concoction where there's a lot of agitation going on in the mind of wanting to reject and accept, reject and accept. There's a lot of agitation going on. So at what stage does this happen in devotional service? At what stage does this happen? There's a lot of confusion. The beginning is called Kanishtha Adhikari. That's a very broad definition. But I was asking about stages. So Sri Rupa Goswami is giving us 8 stages. He is saying Shraddha. Then he is talking about Sadhu Sangha. He is talking about Bhajana Kriya. Then he is talking about Anartha Nivirtihi. What is Anartha? That which has no meaning. We really do not know what has meaning and what doesn't have meaning. We do not. We have to be very careful in jumping to conclusions. That which has no meaning. So the mind is engaging in accepting and rejecting things sometimes which are very favorable, sometimes that are unfavorable. So this is going on. At what stage of consciousness would this happen? When I'm talking about consciousness, please answer me about mode of ignorance, mode of passion, mode of goodness. At what conscious level does the mind engage in accepting, rejecting, accepting, rejecting? When is this agitation very heavy?
Rajas.
Rajas. Because Rajoguna is going to cause extraordinary agitation of the mind, and Rajoguna is required if you have a complex life. Please understand this, dear devotees. If your life is complicated, you are going to need passion to set it right. If you have a complex life, you're going to need passion, which is a fact of life. But for us to take off in devotional service, what is the best mode? Goodness. So we need sattva for us to take off into the sky. But when we are outside in the world and we are working for an organization, that organization does not appreciate sattva. That organization is demanding rajas. Is it not true? That if you are outside, you are going to be demanded to set targets. You have to run towards those targets. Someone is going to sit on top of you, making sure you run towards those targets. They are going to chastise you. They are going to say, if you don't make it, you are going to lose your job. This is rajas. It is required for them to survive outside. So we are in an environment which is going to encourage rajas, which is going to set targets for us. But we need an environment which requires the mode of goodness. Now, do you see how difficult this is? Do you see the challenge? Where we are in an unnatural atmosphere outside, and we are required to change that particular atmosphere and manage when you come back home. 9 to 5, rajas. 5 to 9, you know, it has to be sattva. It's a very big change. It's a very big change for the devotee to make. So very little progress gets made, because when you're home, you strive and you chant, you wake up, you do a few things. The moment you go to work, finished. So if you have a complex lifestyle, you need rajas to manage it, there's no doubt. So what is it which is very important for devotees, practically? What is the strategy which is very important? What is it that you need to be aware of, and what is it that you should always be desiring? We should be desiring the mode of goodness. We should strategize for the mode of goodness. What is it which is going to allow me to remain predominantly in the mode of goodness so that I will not have this agitation? This should be the strategy in the mind. Complex arrangements are not going to help. I've spoken about this before. Sometimes you notice this. As devotees become successful in life and the money starts coming in, then the house becomes bigger, the number of cars increase, it keeps going higher, higher. Life becomes more complex. They do not simplify. They make it more complicated. This is the Grahamedhi platform, where we are not operating as Grahasthas. This is Grahamedhi, where we are complicating our lives. When Krishna is giving us resources, where we can free ourselves from material energy and focus on service, instead of focusing on service after freeing ourselves, we complicate our lives by bringing more complexity. And if you bring more complexity into your life, you're going to need passion to run your life. If you run your life with passion, it will be difficult to chant. Simple. Mental concoction. This place is better, that place is better, maybe this will work out, maybe that will work out. All problems are belonging to passion and ignorance. There are very few people who will come with mode of goodness problems. I have not seen it. I deal with people's lives every day. I don't see mode of goodness problems. I don't see, Prabhuji, I have a sattva problem. I don't see this. I either hear, I have a relationship problem, which is rajas. I have a work-related problem, money-related problem, which is also rajas. Yeah, it is passion. Either work or relationship is passion. I don't hear, I have a sattva problem. So our devotee problems are rajas, tamas. Our devotee problems are mostly rajas. This is our issue, devotees. If you don't strategize for sattva, if you do not want sattva in the next 15 years, 20 years of your life, you will not get it. If you are having problems today, it is because you were not wanting to sit and chant 20 years back. 20 years back, you did not have this aspiration in your heart, I want to sit and chant Harina. If you had sat down before Panchatattva, before your deities, before Prabhupada, 20 years back and told Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, rearrange my life, I want to sit and chant, today life would be easy. But 20 years back, we had so many other desires. Those desires naturally, sometimes, some of them happen, some of them don't happen. They come into play, and once they come into play, our life becomes complicated because we didn't ask for all of this. Today we realize we want to chant, and chanting is what is going to make us happy. We realize that being in devotional service is our only source of happiness. Today we realize it, but 20 years back we didn't have that realization. We were demanding many things in our mind. Those things came, some didn't come, some came with a lot of complications and some came with little complications. Today we have a complicated lifestyle and we are trying to follow a complicated lifestyle. Our process of chanting 16 rounds following the regulative principles is simple. We are complicated. We are the ones who are complicated. We are very complicated in our aspiration. We have to be very careful in thinking that the process is complicated. The process is simple. It is a straightforward, simple process. There is nothing else to do other than follow the instructions of our acharyas. Nothing else to do. It is a simple process. Our lifestyles are complicated. And why is it complicated? Because we didn't think about it 20 years back. We were not desiring pure devotional service 20 years back. We were desiring many things. And those many things come with complications because there is rajas. So devotee problems are rajas, tamas. Rajas first, and then when those desires don't get fulfilled, then it is tamas. People become angry, they become upset. They even blame, you know, they blame the deities even. They say, I'm chanting 16 rounds. Gauranga, I'm chanting 16 rounds. I'm doing seva. Why is my life complicated? Gauranga is saying, I didn't make it complicated. Sorry, I tried. I tried telling you so many times in your heart. This is a fact. This is exactly how it works. So we have to understand that if 20 years back our planning was bad and today we are having problems and what we plan today can change the future. So I am not here to talk about the past. I am not here to talk about the past. I am here to talk about the future. I am here to say that if we desire carefully, then the future can be glorious and it can be less complicated for us. Desiring is very important. Desiring is very important, which is very, very important. Desiring is the most important aspect. We have to desire actively. We have a very powerful process. We chant Harinam and Nija Sarva Shaktihi, all the powers of the entire creation and beyond. And every form of Vaikuntha planet is vested in Harinam. Everything is in Harinam. So we are chanting Harinam. We are worshipping the deities. We are engaging in Guru Puja. We are engaging in austerities of fasting on Ekadasi, Janmashtami. We are engaging in so many different sevas. We can be completely self-sufficient if we have the right desires, because all these activities have the capacity to provide for us in a very comfortable way. Krishna can take care of us in a very nice way. We just have to desire what He wants us to desire. There cannot be mental concoction. What He wants us to desire has to be understood from the desire of our acharyas. It has to be understood from the desire of our acharyas. What is Krishna desiring? Go and ask Srila Rupa Goswami. Go and ask Srila Jiva Goswami. They know what is Krishna desiring and they have written down. They have active realization. So we need to desire what Krishna is desiring. So what is Krishna desiring? You see, what is Krishna desiring? Basically, the 64 different forms of service to Krishna, 5 angas have been chosen. 5 are the most prominent. What are the most prominent angas? Number 1 is Sadhu Sangha. And when you come in touch with Sadhu Sangha, you are supposed to engage in Namasmaranam, Namakirtanam. And once you engage in Namasmaranam, Namakirtanam, the third activity that you have to do is Bhagavat Shravanam. You have to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. The fourth activity that you do is you desire of wanting to live in Mathura, Mathuravas. The fifth activity is Srimurti Seva. So once you are in Mathura, you're also engaging in transcendental activities of worshipping the deity. But the most important is Sadhu Sangha. And Sadhu Sangha is most important because bhakti is independent, just as Krishna is independent. Bhakti is independent, just as Krishna is independent. Our acharyas have found out, can bhakti come from karma? It cannot come from karma. It means karma is superior to bhakti. Can bhakti come from jnana? it cannot come from Gyan, then Gyan would become superior to Bhakti. Bhakti is independent. If Bhakti is independent, where is Bhakti coming from? Can Krishna give us Bhakti? Even Krishna may have the direct mercy of giving us Bhakti, but at the same time, the source of Bhakti is not Krishna. Ultimately it is, as everything is from source from Krishna, but where is Bhakti coming from? She is independent. Where is Bhakti coming from? Bhakti comes from the heart of a Bhakta. We spoke about it in the morning. Okay? We spoke about it in the morning. Bhakti comes from the heart of the Bhakta. The source of Bhakti is Bhakti itself. Srimati Radharani's heart has the maximum amount of Bhakti for Lord Chaitanya, you know, for Krishna. And Srimati Radharani's heart, as Lord Gauranga, is the source of all Bhakti. That particular mercy and the kripa from such a heart filled with Bhakti, compassion comes from a heart filled with Bhakti. And that extraordinary compassion of Gauranga is taken from his heart by Lord Nityananda Ram. And he is distributing this Bhakti all over. Bhakti comes from the heart of a Bhakta. It comes from the heart of a devotee. The devotee has a store of Bhakti. So when we approach Krishna, Krishna says, for you to learn about me, you need to approach someone who has already seen me. Which is quite natural. Isn't it? If you want someone to describe a certain place and a certain activity, you need to approach such a person who has already gone there. They are the most qualified to do so. So Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita as well. We're going to go there and then we'll go further. We're going to 4.9. Janma karma chame divyam yovam vetti tatvatah tektva deham punarjanma naiti mam etiso Arjuna. Krishna is using a critical word here. He is saying, you will know me through tattva, tattvatah. Tattvatah is, you will know me through tattva. What does it mean, tattva? Tattva means it's absolute consideration. There's no speculation. You will have to find out more about me from sadhu, shastra and guru. There is no speculation. Why would sadhu, shastra and guru know about Krishna? Why would they know? Because when Srila Vyasadeva was writing Srimad Bhagavatam, he was seeing Krishna in the spiritual sky, and Srila Vyasadeva, through his spiritual senses, had a direct perception, direct understanding of what Krishna was and how he looked and what he was doing. When Srila Vyasadeva was writing Srimad Bhagavatam, he could see Karanadokashaya Vishnu lying in the causal ocean with universes coming out of his skin and universes going back into the pores of his skin. He could see them. He saw. Scripture is not giving us a metaphor. Scripture is not giving us an example that you have to interpret and figure out. The easiest way to understand scripture is to understand that the person who was writing scripture had direct perception. His spiritual senses gave him a good sense of everything. You see? We are dependent on the Shastra and we are dependent on Srila Vyasadeva because he could see, he recorded. Because he could see and he recorded, whatever he recorded is completely valid and it should be accepted as authority. This is Praman. Pratyaksha is direct perception. You don't need faith to figure out that I am sitting in front of you, do you? I don't need faith to figure out you are sitting in front of me. I can see you. You can see me. This is direct experience. Srila Vyasadeva had direct experience of Srimad Bhagavatam. He took the direct experience and he recorded it. This is a very, very simple, straightforward fact. And when we approach someone who has come in the line of Srila Vyasadeva, who has had direct perception, then we have the ability, through the perception of chanting, through the process of chanting, to also have direct experiences. Krishna consciousness is filled with experiences. It is filled with experiences. The moment you join Krishna consciousness, even at an early stage, even 6 months after you come into the temple, even a month, 2 months later, there is a strange quality of peace and lack of anxiety that fills the devotee. Is this true? I'll put up my hand. I experienced it long back. There was happiness which came out of peace and a lot of, you know, complete freedom from anxiety for most part. This particular good fortune is given to us very early when we come into Krishna consciousness. This is the first experience of coming in touch with something which is very profound and sublime, which is beyond the material sky. This is the first experience. You come into Krishna consciousness, your anxieties go away. Yeah, you're still trying to figure things out, but even in the 1 year You may not be initiated, your anxieties are still going away because you're coming in touch with Krishna consciousness. This is very powerful to understand. It's very important to understand. You already have direct perception of coming in touch with transcendence. The Shastra says this, uses the word Klesha Agni. Klesha means difficulties. Klesha means miseries. Klesha means, you know, attacks in the material world, where we are burning up in the fire of the material world. This is Klesha. Shastra says Klesha Agni. The moment you come here, two leaves will start unfolding. And one of those leaves is Klesha Agni, where your material distress and the fire of material distress would start dissipating, because you're coming in touch with the cool winds coming from and the cool rays coming from the holy names. It becomes very peaceful. This is an early sign of an experience. Krishna consciousness, again, the second leaf is good fortune. It is called Shubhada, where we start understanding our relationship with Krishna. Slowly, steadily, we start understanding a relationship with Krishna. We start understanding we don't belong here in the first place. This is an early sign. Krishna consciousness is commonly, normally thought of as walking on a road for thousands of miles for the next 50, 60, 70 years of your life, as long as you exist. How many of us here think that you're going to be walking on a plain road towards Krishna's abode, Goloka? Good. It is not a plain road. It isn't. Krishna consciousness is like scaling a peak. You have to be scaling a peak. A peak is quite steep. And the peak has different levels of achievements. You start scaling a peak, you reach a plateau. That is Krishna consciousness. When you reach the plateau, you start receiving some kind of a gift. And you start scaling the peak again, you receive a second kind of gift. But if your effort does not intensify year after year while scaling a peak, it won't work, because we will be stuck at whatever level we are in. Efforts have to be intensified. What we did in the previous year has to be improved upon in the present year. What we did in the previous year will not cut it. You will not be able to move forward with what you did in the previous year. Because you're climbing a mountain. You are climbing a mountain. You are going to become more and more skilled as you climb a mountain each year. Krishna is going to give you gifts at each and every level. You're going to come closer and closer. There is going to be lesser and lesser distress from material energy. There's going to be greater and greater understanding of our relationship with Krishna. But there is a need for us to be able to intensify our effort, because effort needs to be intensified at each and every step as we go up higher and higher. This is Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is scaling a peak. We have to accept it. It is not a walk on a plain field where there are no ups and downs. You keep walking, and at some point in the future, you're going to bump into Krishna. He's right there. You know, he's just saying, you know, keep coming, and I'm just waiting here. You know, you're not far off. Which is the truth in reality. It is not what it is. We need to understand that there has to be an intense effort for this. It requires that we modify our desires. It requires that we become quite single-pointed in achieving that. When you're trying to achieve something quite intense, and you're trying to climb up, and you're trying to go through higher stages, how can you have a complete dispersion of desires where you have hundreds of things to do? You can only have one thing to do, correct? And everything else has to adjust to that one thing to do, which is what is required. When you have too many things to do, when you're scaling a peak, and when there's lack of concentration and there are too many goals which are being kept while you're scaling a peak, the peak would be difficult to climb. You won't be able to scale easily. You need to have a single-pointed mind. Everything will be provided with a single-pointed mind. Everything. When we start thinking that I need this and I need that for the purpose of Krishna consciousness, and if it is really required, it will be provided for. We are not without resources. We are not without resources. We have abundant resources. Each and every one of us have been blessed with exactly what is required for us to move forward. How do we know that? What did Mahaprabhu tell us? What did Mahaprabhu tell us? What did he give us? He gave us Harinam. What else did he give us? What else did he give us? What else did Mahaprabhu emphasize? What else did Mahaprabhu emphasize?
Nityananda.
Okay, compassion, preaching. What else?
Vaishnava Seva.
Vaishnava Seva, yes. What else did Mahaprabhu emphasize? I'm sorry, I'm going to keep asking.
Taking prasadam.
Sorry?
Taking prasadam.
No, it is actually the truth. Sevo mukehi jihvado. There are only two types of seva where you start with. One is to chant nama and the other to eat prasadam. Yes, I agree with you, but there's more. Yeah? Yeah. Mahaprabhu, Krishna said this in the Bhagavad Gita. I'm going to read what Krishna said. Then we will get into what Mahaprabhu said. Krishna said, Ananyas chintayanto mam e janaha pariupashate tesham nityabhyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Krishna is making a statement saying, I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. Is Krishna lying? Okay, Krishna cannot lie. This is Shastra. Krishna is not lying. He is speaking the truth. He is saying, I will preserve what you have. I will carry what you lack. So, are you lacking things today in your life to chant properly? Ask yourself. Ask yourself this question. Are you lacking things today to chant properly? Okay? Yes? Basically, if you think that you are lacking things today for chanting properly, it means Krishna is not doing his job. When Krishna says, I'm preserving what you have and I'm going to carry what you lack, he means it. At any given time in our lives, we have exactly what we need for us to go to the next level of advancement in Krishna consciousness. The particular circumstance that we are in could be arranged by our karma. Undoubtedly, if today we are in a complex environment, complex situation, health-wise, relationship-wise, economically, this has been arranged by your karma. However, when we start understanding that Krishna, you have arranged this because you say so in the Bhagavad Gita, you have given me exactly what I need for me to move forward, Krishna will get involved. It's a fact. When you buy an apple and you bring it to Panchatattva, the apple when you buy with a few euros is matter. When you bring it to Panchatattva, it becomes spirit, prasadam. Why? Because now Krishna is involved. When our life is offered to Krishna and we accept it, saying, this is what we need, I am going to try do my best with the circumstances that I am in, Krishna will interfere positively to make things happen. This is what this verse is. He will preserve what we have and he will carry what I lack, provided we accept that our present circumstance is exactly what we need and we push ourselves to the maximum based on the present circumstance. We should always examine whether we are pushing ourselves to the maximum based on the present circumstance. If we are pushing ourselves to the maximum based on the present circumstance, more opportunities will come because Krishna will make arrangements. How does Mahaprabhu say this? He says, Trinadapi Sunichena Taruariva Sahishnuna Amani Manadena Kirtane Sadahari. What does Trinadapi Sunichena Taruariva Sahishnuna mean? Mahaprabhu literally is translated, the way to understand it is Mahaprabhu is saying, accept life as if it has been arranged by Krishna. This is Taruariva Sahishnuna. Be tolerant of life as if it has been arranged by Krishna. And act upon it with courage. You should act upon your life with courage after accepting it as if it has been arranged by Krishna. This is humility. Humility is to accept life as arranged by Krishna and to act upon it with courage. It does not mean we sit tight and we do nothing. We try our best to make some endeavor, but our effort is going to be completely focused on improving our ability to move forward. This is Trinadapi Sunichena. Mahaprabhu gave us. Then there can be Kirtaniya Sadahari because constantly we are going to endeavor trying to accept things as they are, as if it has been arranged by Krishna, doing our very best to act upon those circumstances practically and spiritually in every other way. Then that becomes very auspicious because then Krishna will preserve what we have and he will carry what we lack. This is a fact. This is a sutra. This is how we operate. This is our technology to remove obstacles. This is how we remove obstacles. We accept things as if Krishna has arranged it. The day we accept things that Krishna, you have arranged my life, I am going to see what I can do to improve my Krishna consciousness based on my present circumstances. My circumstances are difficult. I am going to see what I can do to improve upon it. The moment we say, you have arranged it, he becomes a part of it. This is a transcendental trick. And it is supported by Shastra. This is a transcendental trick. It is supported by Shastra. 9.22, I will preserve what you have. Trinadapi Sunichena Tarori Vasaishnuna. Mahaprabhu is saying this. I will support you. Accept it. This is Mahaprabhu's statement. You accept it. Trinadapi Sunichena, become humble. Become humble and accept life as if Krishna has arranged it. Tarori Vasaishnuna, tolerate the circumstances. Do your very best. Then there can be Kirtanya Sadahari. Amani mana dena kirtanya sadahari. This is Mahaprabhu Sutra. This is the same as this verse. I will carry what you lack. I will preserve what you have. You need to do your best as if I have arranged your life today. We don't want to question our present. We want to see what we can do to improve. We want to see what we can do to push it to the maximum. When we start pushing things to the maximum, Krishna will do his part. Krishna will do his part. This is without a doubt. This is without a doubt. It has been seen in history. Wonderful things happen. This is our way of arranging things in life, is first accepting things as they are and then pushing ourselves to the maximum to achieve whatever can be achieved within those circumstances. And then Krishna steps in and he gives us the ability to move forward, to remove more obstacles. This is our way of doing things. This is our Siddhanta. You chant sincerely, and you follow the principles given by Mahaprabhu and everything else just gets arranged. So the difficulty that we notice in our lives, the devotee lives in general, has to do with the mode of passion. We need to get away from the mode of passion. This is very basic, but without following this particular basic instruction, we would struggle. We need to get away from this. We need to use this passion in the service of Krishna. We need to strategize for goodness. When we are in passion, we will develop desires that are related to passion. When we are in passion and you take a walk along your mall or whatever it is that you have in Ljubljana, in Slovenia, you will feel like buying things. You will say, this is missing in my life, that is missing in my life. Life itself in passion is always a situation of missing things. There's a lot of anxiety. I don't have this, I don't have this, I don't have that, I don't have this. Devotee issues have to do with the modes. Devotee life needs to be in the mode of goodness. They need to strategize, they need to desire. They need to understand, this is what I need. I need the mode of goodness. The platform of goodness is required for me to take off. Let me ask for the mode of goodness from Krishna. Let me think about it. Let me start looking at life and say, these are my choices. Where is it that I can be solidly on the mode of goodness for many, many years to come? What is it which is going to safeguard my sadhana? What is it which is going to safeguard sadhu sangha? This is very important for us to consider. These are not ordinary considerations, because these decisions are going to be quite heavy if it is not taken properly. It's very important for us to consider. So when we start talking about permanent versus impermanent goals come up in passion. Goals that have nothing to do with Krishna consciousness. Impermanent goals. Let me give you an example. It's quite astounding. I'll give you an example. In Vedic society, there are four varnas and there are four ashrams. Which is the highest varna? Brahmana. The Brahmana varna is the highest. Shudra varna is the lowest. Sannyasi is the highest. Then the lowest is Grahastha. Basically, when you start looking at the Grahastha ashram is the lowest in certain ways. The reason is that we deal too much with passion and ignorance. Grahastha ashram, I'm a Grahastha, so I'm not trying to discriminate against Grahasthas. You know, you can't say I'm political. I am merely saying that the grahasthas have to deal with passion and ignorance more than a brahmachari and sannyasi. It's a fact. Because we deal with the outside world, we have to plan for the future, all of this is a part of it. Now, amongst the four varnas, the brahmana varna is considered to be superior. Both the varna and the ashram are simply aspects of our conditioning. It is simply our conditioning. We are conditioned. So in Vedic society, if you did not have Bhagavad Dharma, if you did not have Krishna consciousness, in Vedic society, if you are born as a Shudra and you do your duties of a Shudra very nicely according to scripture, you serve the remaining three varnas, then you have the ability to improve your chance of being born in the next better varna, which is the Vaishya varna. This is Vedic society. Then you do your duty of a Vaishya very carefully. Be a businessman. You are desirous of making money. And if you are desirous of making a lot of money, and then you use the money for proper ways to engage in proper activities in Dharma, you take care of cows, then that particular businessman has the ability to graduate in the next lifetime to his consciousness of being a Kshatriya. The Kshatriya, similarly, if he's going to be 100% focused on Dharma, has the ability to graduate to becoming a Brahmana. This is conditioning. Conditioning is improving based on the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, where they tolerate their circumstances, develop detachment from those activities, and they move from one varna to the other. So even the Brahmana varna is conditioning. It is conditioning. It is a conditioned state. Does everybody understand this word, right? It is a common word in Krishna consciousness. Conditioning. We are vulnerable to that particular varna. If you have that quality, you're going to be vulnerable to that varna. Jaya Shri Shri Panthachatva Bhagavan ki. So, we are going to be vulnerable to the varna. Does everybody understand this word conditioning? We are conditioned to be Brahmana. Now, what is the recommendation for a Brahmana? Because the Brahmana is from a Shudra, he has become a Vaishya, Vaishya has become Kshatriya, now he has become Brahman. How does a Brahman relieve himself of his conditioning? What is the recommendation? The recommendation in scripture is for the Brahmana to practice the Gayatri Mantra. The Brahma Gayatri. You know, Tat Savitur Varenyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi. This is the Brahma Gayatri. Scripture says, Vedic scripture says for a Brahmana, you sit down and you practice this extraordinary Gayatri Mantra. It is very powerful and this will help you go higher than your conditioned state of being a Brahmana. You are now as a Brahmana in the highest stage of more of goodness. Shudra, ignorance. Vaishya, passion ignorance. Kshatriya, pure passion. Brahmana, mode of goodness. How do you go beyond mode of goodness? Chant Gayatri Mantra. So what is the conclusion of scripture? This highest activity of chanting the Gayatri Mantra and the Indi performed by the Brahmana, who is the highest Varna, even that activity is anitya, it is temporary. Why is it considered to be temporary? Even that particular activity is considered temporary. And I'm not talking about the chanting of Gayatri Mantras in our movement. I'm talking about general Vedic society. Why is the Gayatri Mantra chanting by a Brahmana considered to be a temporary activity? Why? It is called Anitya, it is not Nitya Dharma. It is Anitya, it is temporary, it is called Naimitika. You are born in a certain conditioned state and you want to move away from that state, you are chanting the Gayatri Mantra. Why is the Brahmana chanting the Gayatri Mantra? He is chanting the Gayatri Mantra to be free from his conditioning. After he is free from his conditioning, does he need that mantra? No, so that's why it's temporary. If the highest varna and the highest activity which that varna performs is also temporary, what to say of so many things that we do on a day-to-day basis? Can you imagine that? We do so many things on a day-to-day basis in the outside world. If the Brahmana's chanting of the Gayatri is anitya and Shastra is saying it is temporary, all it is going to do is relieve you of your conditioning. What to say of our goals that we set up in this world that are not connected to Krishna consciousness? What is the fate of those goals? Can you understand how complex it is? The Brahmana's Gayatri is condemned by our acharyas. Our acharyas have condemned it. They are saying, no. Your Gayatri Mantra is wonderful. It is an extraordinary mantra. It can increase the mode of goodness quite substantially. It can even take you beyond the material sky into the spiritual sky. But it will not give you the relationship with Krishna. There is no rasa. There can't be a relationship. So our acharyas are saying that is temporary. You are simply trying to get away from the material sky. It is temporary. If that is temporary, what about our activity which we perform during the day outside in this world that are not related to Krishna consciousness? Can you just imagine the profundity of how dangerous this is when you start comparing that superlative Brahmana, who is the highest Varna, he is chanting the Gayatri, which is the highest mantra for them. Not for us. For us, the highest mantra is the Maha Mantra. But for them, the highest mantra is the Gayatri. Dharma Gayatri. I'm sorry, not the Dharma. Brahma Gayatri. The Gayatri given, you know, by the ancestors, and it comes through lineage. Tat Savitur Varendyam. Does this make sense, dear devotees? Can you understand that this is the highest activity for the highest Varna in Vedic society that is also condemned? Because it is temporary. What to say of the activities and the goals that we set up in this world, which are surely, surely temporary? Do you understand how profound this is? This is Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's statement. He's saying, no, this is temporary. In Jaya Dharma, this is temporary. You don't set that goal up. You might be this, but this is temporary. So this is anitya, this is naimitika. This is going to be given up when you lose your conditioning. So today, if we are struggling with our conditioning, if we are struggling with our conditioning and our conditioning is forcing us to set up goals in different ways, we should understand that these goals cannot be set up separate from the nitya dharma of the soul, which is to engage in the chanting of Hare Krishna, chanting and wanting to engage in a pure devotional service. It cannot be set up. Our conditioning is forcing us to set up goals. We are thinking something is important and we are forced to set up goals. Do we understand how dangerous this is? This whole goal setting process and desiring things which we do not know about, we really do not know what is the implication of what is positive, what is negative. We aspire for things we don't know. If the Gayatri is dangerous and it only gets you across and it doesn't get you Krishna, what to say of our goals? We have to be careful. So what is the best way for us to understand what is a permanent goal and we desire a permanent goal? What is a permanent goal? What is safest for us to desire? The safest benchmark of desiring life, you're very fortunate that you're just starting out. I was just hearing you speak to the television reporter saying you're starting out. Yeah? You're very fortunate. So this is good for you because you're starting out. You can plan better. We have the good fortune of already coming in touch with what is going to make us happy. The next step is for us to figure out on how to keep this for the rest of our lives. This is all we need to do. This is strategy. Someone approached me who was only 25. He had just graduated from one of the top universities in America. He got a job in a big law firm in New York City. I was mentoring him. And then he asked me, Prabhu, what should I do? You know, I was mentoring him even in his education and other things. And he was asking me, what should I do? What do you think I should do? How should I move forward in my role? And I told him, you should plan for retirement. He said, I'm only 25. I said, you should plan for retirement. I'm only 25, Prabhu. I still have a long way to go. Please give me an idea as to how to progress. I said, you should plan for retirement. I said, you plan for retirement because Krishna has given you a job. It pays very well. You are 25. Choose to retire by 35 so that you can dedicate your day in the service of Krishna. If you have a roof over your head and you have things paid for and you are able to feed yourself comfortably and you have some peace in your heart so that you don't have to worry about bills, that should be the goal of anybody who is outside who is working. You should make yourself independent of material energy at the soonest. You should desire that so that you could be free from the mode of passion and ignorance, where we could dedicate ourselves to serving. We could spend the entire 24 hours in service. What is the sense in setting up goals which have no sense at all, which are even going to be condemned? If the Gayatri of the Brahmana is temporary, what to say of our goal of something which is, you know, which doesn't even make any sense? It has no particular connection whatsoever. We should plan to disengage. If disengagement requires resources, we should plan for that. Then our purpose outside would make sense. If you're engaging with material energy, use that time to disengage at some point soon. That is life. That is Krishna consciousness. We can't have both together. It doesn't work. One conflicts the other. One requires passion, the other requires goodness. It is conflicting. It does not mean we stop working. It does not mean we give up work. It does not mean we give up family. It means we desire understanding where the problems are. This is very important. It is practical. We are grahasthas. If you are grahastha, you plan carefully. If you are very young, then you have a great opportunity because you can start desiring Krishna consciousness. You can desire a life where you can absorb yourself and offer your fullest to service while keeping every responsibility taken care of. If this desire comes in the mind and you're going to go out to work and you're every day going to work, that work will also be meaningful. Because you're working hard in an environment, not for sense gratification, but you're working hard in an environment to stabilize so that you could move forward and absorb yourself in bhakti. This is what is going to make us happy, not what is outside there. You know, we don't belong there. We somehow feel we can't engage. Yeah, I look at it. You know, a devotee has vacation time. What do? They go to the dham. Yeah, they don't go and have fun. They just go. Their fun is devotees. Their fun is sangha. Their fun is kirtan. They've already figured out happiness. The biggest quest of philosophers has already been figured out by a young child in our movement. Isn't it astonishing? A young child in our movement is clear about what is going to be happiness. They know that. They know happiness is sangha. They know happiness is kirtan. They know happiness is being a part of, you know, the group which is going to celebrate Krishna. They already figured this out. Now all they need to do is work to ensure that they finish their business outside and then engage in absorbed seva, so that they can have more happiness. This is important, if not for us, it is important for the next generation, so that they don't make the same mistakes. Srila Prabhupada said this. He said our third generation, they would take over the world. Why would Srila Prabhupada make this statement? Why did he say the third generation would take over the world? He said that because the first generation is the pioneer. They pioneer, they open centers, they open temples, they preach all over the world, they set things up, they make all kinds of heavy sacrifices. The next generation basically has not desired Krishna consciousness at birth. They come in and they figure out Krishna consciousness is wonderful and they start practicing Krishna consciousness and then they want Krishna consciousness for their children and they start saying, I should have done this, I should not have done that, I should have not done this. So they already know that they could have done many things better. This is the second generation. The third generation will be protected by their parents in the second generation so that they won't make the same mistakes which their parents did. They would have proper desires in the heart. They would know where their happiness is. They would pursue life to the fullest. This is why Srila Prabhupada said that they would have maximum advantage in Krishna consciousness. Why? Because they would have figured out what is to be done and what is not to be done. So goal setting and understanding impermanence versus permanence is very, very critical. The five most angas of bhakti are sadhu sangha, namasmaranam, Bhagavat Shravanam, Mathura Vas, and Srimuti Sevaya. Mathura Vas is living in Mathura. Do we need to go to Mathura? No. Shastra does not say you need to go to Mathura. Mathura Vas essentially means we develop consciousness in our heart where we have the same experiences as living in Mathura, in Vrindavan Dham. You could be in Slovenia, you could have Mathura Vas happening in the heart. This is a Shastra conclusion. If our chanting is good, we are in Mathura nicely. So this desire of only wanting to be in Vrindavan and chant Harinam is a state of consciousness, is a state of coming to reality. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, he writes in his prayer, the Radha Kundashtakam, where he says that one whose heart has been completely cleansed and in their heart there's only the desire of coming to Sri Radha Kund and chanting Harinam, for them this wonderful pastime of the divine couple would become visible. So he's giving us a little bit of a clue there, saying that if your heart is cleansed to such an extent that you desire nothing but chanting Harinam in Vrindavan, then you will start being able to experience things in the spiritual sky. That particular state can be attained outside of Vrindavan as well. So we keep these five angas of bhakti as a main goal. we keep these five angas of bhakti in planning, we start examining to see where is sadhu sangat, where is namasmaran. We start looking at different aspects of it. This is very important for us to do so. We need to examine where these five angas will flourish, and we need to desire these five angas and make changes to our life based on these five angas. When we start doing things with an idea of wanting to improve the five angas of bhakti, then resources are made available. This is why Krishna says that preserve what you have and carry what you lack, because you're desiring properly. If you desire properly, then Krishna is going to make arrangements. Krishna is not here to cause even greater problems for us. It is not his business. He will not allow us to do things which are going to take us away from him. He wants us to be close to him. He will allow things which are very beneficial, which are very supportive. I've spoken for quite long, and I just want to stop here and see if you have questions, and then we could continue further in the next session. Any questions or comments on what we have shared so far? Yes, Prabhu.
If Krishna preserves what we can, so,
if Krishna preserves what we have, why then some devotees lose everything?
Sorry, why then some devotees?
Lose everything.
Devotees losing everything comes in two categories. The first category of devotees losing everything comes because it is karmic, and they're going through some very heavy karmic exchange because of which they lose everything. This is the first category. The second category is where Krishna has given himself to them. This is akinchana Krishna. Krishna has given himself to them. Now they have Krishna. They are seeing him, they are touching him, they are talking to him all the time. And he takes everything away from them so that they can concentrate on him. So these are two different categories. The second category is most fortunate because they have Krishna. Krishna has become subservient. He is very specifically arranged that I am with you, you are with me, you are completely happy. And it is the truth. If anybody has attained Krishna and Krishna is there and they are perceiving Krishna, then that person does not need anything. Does not need anything. He does not care or she does not care if things change in the world, because it is the truth. The mellow and the sweetness of just coming in touch with Krishna is the truth. You see, again, metaphorically, we think it's a metaphor when we hear this word, the holy names are sweet. The holy names are nectarian. How many of you believe it's a statement? A promotional statement, advertisement. By our acharyas. The holy names are sweet. They are like sugar candy. I swim in the nectar of the holy names. How many of us believe this is advertisement?
Sometimes.
It isn't. If you're chanting very sincerely, holy names are like sugar candy. They are. There is reality to that statement. It is sugar candy. It is literally sugar candy. This is not made up. It is not an advertisement. The devotee, every time they chant Harinam, will fill their mouth with sugar candy. They would feel as if they are munching candy every time they call upon Krishna's names. Krishna's names are so sweet. And this is not an advertising pitch. It is not a statement just to give an idea. It is reality. That is why acharyas have written saying it is sweet, madhur. It is sweet. The highest tattva, even in the mode of goodness, the higher tattva of mode of goodness is sweet, devotees. It is sweet. The mode of goodness is sweet. So what about transcendence? What about Krishna? You can't even imagine. The mode of goodness is sweet in reality. The highest mode of goodness is sweet in nature. When you come in touch with it, there's a certain sweetness associated with it. This is reality. This is not made up. It is not fiction. What about Krishna? There's sweetness. So the point I want to make to you is, this sweetness and this ecstasy and this extraordinary happiness experienced by a devotee happens at very early stages of them coming in touch with Krishna. What to say when Krishna has given himself fully? So for them, losing everything in this world is nothing. For them, they are completely happy because they are filled with nectar. It may be hard for us to perceive, but this is the truth. Because they have something far more precious than they can ever hope for. That's the first point. The previous case that we spoke of, where they lose everything because they have basically they're going through some heavy karmic reactions, that is possible due to karmic reactions. How much has the devotee, I'm not saying the devotees have wanted that kind of an experience, neither does Krishna want to see them suffer so much, but sometimes some karma is so intense that you just need to go through it for you to be able to come out of it. Krishna doesn't prevent that because those are karmic reactions. They just go through it. It is hard to conceive as to how that could help, but those devotees, if you meet them, they, after a few years, they would be relieved. Sometimes it is that way. You just have to kind of take things away from someone for them to move forward. But this is not Krishna, it is their karmic reaction. This is how we need to understand it. It's a fact. It's a karmic reaction. It's very heavy karmic reactions. How do we know if Krishna has done something or not done something? How do we know that? Anybody has an answer? How do we know if Krishna has done something to us or Krishna has not done? Yes, Prabhu.
We ask an authority, spiritual master.
Yes, no? But there are other ways too. If something happens in life and it makes us chant, it makes us read Srimad Bhagavatam in a deeper way, our faith increases and we engage in Bhagavad Shravan, Shravanam, our devotional service increases after certain incidents in life, we know Krishna is involved. If Krishna is not involved, there would just be suffering. Then we know it is just karma. Yeah? It's a straightforward fact. Why would Krishna, listen to this very carefully, why would Krishna interfere with Krishna consciousness? We should think about it. Why would Krishna interfere with Krishna consciousness? He wouldn't. Krishna would never interfere with Krishna consciousness. We interfere with Krishna consciousness. If our Krishna consciousness increases because something is gone from us, it means Krishna is involved and this is a blessing. If our Krishna consciousness goes down, it is probably because of bad karma. It is because we are trying to do something, we desired some aspects of our life negatively, and this happened due to that. So there is a big distinction. You can judge it as to how Krishna is involved. Any other point? Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you for a nice lecture. Useful lecture, I think. You were speaking, if I understood correctly, that we should remove ourselves from this immense activity of everyday life, which today's circumstances impose on us, and plan for going out and using all this for gathering, collecting money, for getting out. But what if you are involved with devotee family, and you kind of develop this consciousness and this idea, and this you have nurtured this desire to go, but there are people who depend
on us.
And people who depend on you, wife and others. And they are not pure devotees. And the staying together might be jeopardized by you leaving the immense activity because they need things, they think they need things, and you have no control over their needs or too less control over their needs, and you might think it's better that we stay together and it's better that I stay involved in all this rajasic activity. What to do in such a situation?
Well, I want to clarify and make a statement first. I never said anything about leaving. I said desiring the mode of goodness. Desire an adequate, comfortable platform for the future where we can engage in proper devotional service. Desiring this whilst we engage today in the circumstances of life and tolerating life is what I was talking about when I used the word Trinadapi Sunichena Taroriva Sahishnuna. We tolerate the circumstances of life. We desire an outcome for the future which is going to allow us maximum participation in the process of bhakti. And by doing so, we act upon the present with courage. And that in turn is going to give us greater and greater opportunities because we are desiring the right thing. Rather than desiring things which may not fix the future but could cause even bigger problems. That is what I meant.
You were speaking about cultivating certain kind of desire actually, but not changing outer activities.
True.
Like this.
Exactly. Okay. There should not be. The circumstances of life should be tolerated. From tolerance comes knowledge. From knowledge comes detachment. From detachment comes the possibility of not desiring such circumstances again. That is why. Yeah.
But it's hard if you are involved in this kind of active environment. It's hard to be in sattva in sense that you are detached, and because you are afraid of losing a job, because losing a job might mean losing a family.
True.
And then you are a bit contradictory, because you are advising not to leave this environment, but on the other hand you say, this cultivating desire, it's very hard in this environment, so you on one side say, leave this environment as soon as you can. So
I'll clarify this. Yeah, I'm not saying, what I'm trying to say is, when we are in this environment today, we accept the environment as if Krishna has arranged it for us. We don't reject it. We accept it, saying, this is what you have given me. This in turn will involve Krishna into our lives deeper. And when we are desiring to be wanting to be with him in the future, Krishna coming into our life would give us the power to change our life and the family's life for the future. That is what I was explaining.
Thank you.
Yeah. So not so much leaving, yeah, but desiring, but involving Krishna so that Krishna would help us change things. We don't have the power, Krishna does. Yes. Yes, Prabhu.
Can also be the case that the karma and the Krishna involvement go together. In other words, that Krishna use our karma for purification or for some to teach us something, or this Krishna involvement is completely out of our karma. Can you clarify this point?
When we engage in devotional service, Krishna's spiritual potency takes over. It is not Krishna's material potency. It is not Mahamaya. It is Yogamaya who takes over. And Yogamaya potency of Krishna is actively trying to bring us closer and closer to Krishna, provided we have the desire to do so. So in that sense, the karma is seen as what is beneficial to bring the person closer. Those are activities that would be kept, those experiences would be kept, and then what is not beneficial, Krishna would take that problem away, because that is not going to benefit the devotee. Provided the devotee in his heart is sincerely desiring more and more seva and devotional service. To the extent to which we have taken Krishna into our heart, to that extent our karma is managed by his potencies, and not by the external energy, the material energy. So there's a difference between the two. So in one effect, we are being managed. But to what extent, it depends on how much we have given ourselves to. In many ways you will find seemingly most difficult circumstances become very easy. And you will also find that sometimes difficult circumstances come in the life of the devotee, but then they come out much stronger as devotees after that. So that's Krishna's involvement, saying, it's okay for you to go through this, it is not okay for you to go through this, I will remove this problem. So there's a distinction.
Also, when Krishna says "Yasya hamanugrihnami harishetam dhanamsharai" in the 10th canto, when he especially favors someone, he takes away all of his material possessions, and then he's free to surrender to Krishna. And if it's not rude of me, in the 6th canto, Vishwana Chakravarti Thakur mentions three reasons why it appears externally that devotees sometimes may suffer. It's to protect the confidentiality of bhakti, and then people from the outside see, yeah, you know, you go through the same garbage as we do. And also to protect non-devotional philosophies, because they're also his children, so they can continue to believe whatever they want to believe, and to increase the eagerness of the devotee.
True, taking away akinchana Krishna. This is the whole concept of akinchana Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu, both.
He also says one thing in the 10th canto, offenses. When devotees commit some offenses, they may get external reactions as in the form of suffering.
Because, yes, one of the four pillars of anarthas is aparadokrita, where the aparadokrita aparad is committed, and automatically there are all kinds of heavy reactions which the devotee has to face. The devotee comes in touch with the material energy in certain ways fully because they have lost protection. When aparad is committed, in reality, that devotee who is committing aparad has already lost protection. That is why he is going after the aparad in the first place. But thank you for sharing that. Thank you.
Thank you for the lecture, because it was philosophical and you gave us so many practical things.
Now you know that I have been beaten up in life a bit, looks like. So I can be philosophical and practical too. True.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Prabhu. Any other comment? Yes.
Thank you very much, Vrindavan Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada, before he left, gave the instruction to his disciple to try to establish Daivi Varnashrama Dharma. And yet you say today that also, you know, chanting Gayatri is kind of conditioning and we should overcome that. So I'm thinking if in fact Sanatana Dharma is higher to Daivi Varnashrama Dharma, and is there like any purpose still in this instruction, or should we still strive to do that, or just think, oh, I'm eternal servant of Krishna, and whatever service there is, I will try to do it.
I can answer it in a couple of ways. One of the best verses in Srimad Bhagavatam, purports, every purport is wonderful, but there's a purport which is quite profound. And that comes from the 8th canto, 2nd chapter, 30th verse. Let me see if I can get it here. 8th canto, 2nd chapter, 30th verse. And in that verse, it is basically Gajendra, the elephant, has entered into water. And he is battling with the crocodile. The crocodile has caught Gajendra's legs. And the Gajendra and crocodile are struggling for thousands of years. The struggle is going on. And Srila Prabhupada comments saying, each and every year of those thousands of years, the crocodile is gaining in strength, while Gajendra the elephant is losing strength. And the reason is because the crocodile is naturally situated in its own environment. It is in water. Because the crocodile's environment is water, the crocodile is gaining on a day-by-day basis. Because Gajendra is situated in an alien, foreign environment, day-by-day Gajendra is losing his strength and his potency. So then he says the soldiers of Krishna consciousness must strive to be physically, sensually, emotionally, and also spiritually completely strong for them to be able to battle the forces of Maya. Because otherwise, as each year passes, if we are unnaturally situated, we will get into a lot of difficulties because we are fighting against nature and it is going to take away our ability to fight. So he is basically saying that being on a natural environment, what is the meaning of a natural environment? That is Varnashram. Being naturally situated is to suit yourself and situate yourself in the specific ashram and the varna that you are suited for based on your propensity. Yeah, this is his instruction. You know, don't try to be something which you're not. You're probably better off using your strength. Lessons will come from that environment. You will tolerate those lessons. From there, you will obtain knowledge and you will obtain detachment and you'll be able to move forward. Okay, this is the instruction given by Srila Prabhupada. So, Varnashram is required. So, initial choice is required. There is no doubt. Because when we are unnaturally situated, we become weak as time progresses by. The second point is, situating ourselves in an environment which is natural also means that we are learning how to operate within the modes. We are trying to go from one lower mode to the higher mode in a very natural way rather than having some disturbance. So this is what we are trying to talk about. But my statement to it was, while we wait for all of this to happen, start desiring properly. Because this is dangerous when we start thinking that something else has to happen for us to be sincere in Krishna consciousness, that in itself is dangerous. It is better for us to change our desires and start functioning in a very healthy way within the capacity that we have been allowed by Srila Prabhupada today. So if we take each day has been arranged by Krishna, if each day has been given by Krishna, we do our best in this environment. then the next day we are more prepared to move forward as we improve upon things. So that was where I was coming from. So I was not trying to, in the sense that I'm not minimizing the need for Devi Vaina, Varnashram or Sanatana Dharma. So your point about Gayatri, I'll touch upon it because that is where your doubt came from. Yeah? Our acharyas even reject. At some point, they say, Anya Bilashita Shunyam, Jnana Karmadi Anavritam. We spoke about it in the morning. Jnana Karmadi Anavritam. Yeah? They are basically saying, even give up desires for fruitive activity, and they are also not wanting this very specific Jnanamai Bhakti, which is a part of other parts of the spiritual sky. They want pure Shuddha Bhakti, which is happening in Braja. So they are basically even going at that level. They are saying jnana as a mode of wanting to obtain liberation. Jnanamai bhakti as in seen in Mathura and other places where there is opulence. They are rejecting all of that and they are saying, I want Shuddha bhakti where I can relate to Krishna as it is related in Raja by the most prominent personalities in Raja by their example. We want to walk in their footsteps. So the point I am trying to make is, we even reject parts of Vaikuntha. What to say of wanting to get out of the material world. The Gayatri Mantra was given for the purpose of elevating ourselves to the spiritual sky, to cross over. It is very effective in increasing the mode of goodness. But Harinam can also do that. Harinam does it. So our sadhana and sadhya are very closely aligned. Where we practice our sadhana sincerely, this allows us to reach the goal in a very aligned manner. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's point was, if the highest varna in a regular varna system, if their goals are subservient to our goals and what they are doing is subservient to the objectives that we are engaging in, then we should be very careful in desiring things in this world. So that was the point I was trying to bring across, not minimizing varnashram. Yeah, I wouldn't discourage a brahmana who is chanting Gayatri sincerely. I would say, please continue chanting. I would never discourage that.
The intention that we do it, this anukulena, if you chant
favorably
Brahma Gayatri with bhakti mode, or?
Well, see, the Brahma Gayatri can be chanted with bhakti. The function of the Brahma Gayatri is to take us beyond the material universe and give us liberation. But liberation is not a goal. Liberation is not a goal. We achieve the goal of liberation in Namabhas. 1 year after a bhakta or a bhaktin comes into a movement and they practice bhakti, they feel relieved from material energy. It is one sense of feeling relieved, it is one sense of liberation as well. The point I'm trying to make is that liberation is a very, very small goal for us because we achieve it when there is offenseless chanting. Anartha Nivritti is complete, the devotee is already in the mode of goodness, the higher mode of goodness. They are already having very little to do with the material world at that point in time. What to say of, anything else. So our goal is not to complete Anartha Nivritti through the Brahma Gayatri or anything. That is not our goal. Our goal is to develop a relationship. The Brahma Gayatri does not have the ability to give us the relationship with Krishna. Can it be used by brahmanas for the purpose of elevating the consciousness? Yes, that is what it is meant to be used for. They are meant to, because moksha is the goal, the specific ayana of a brahmana in a regular Vedic society. He is after moksha, kshatriya is after dharma. He is aligned to moksha. In that sense, the Brahma Gayatri is the most important tool for him or her.
How is that in Bhagavad Gita? Krishna says, out of mantras, I am Gayatri.
Good. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna first says in 4.9, that you have to approach a spiritual master who has seen Tattva Darshan and you have to receive instructions from him. You will have to sit with him, serve him nicely, and once you become subservient, then you would realize the truth in 4.34. But then, in 18.65, the same Krishna says, he is not telling us to learn Tattva. He is not telling us to do anything. He is saying, Manmanabha Madhvakto Madhyaji Mam Namaskuru. He says, always think of me, worship me, offer homage unto me. So Krishna is progressively taking the person to the ultimate stage. In the initial stage, one requires Adav Shraddha. Faith has to be given. It has to be cultivated by the spiritual master. One has to acquire knowledge of spiritual tenets because that is going to build their confidence and reinforce their ability to engage in bhakti, sadhana bhakti. Once the sadhana bhakti turns into attachment, ashakti, and at ashakti, material energy does not influence the person. So Krishna is talking different statements progressively, depending on how the devotee has progressed. So in that sense, yes, he is the Gayatri Mantra, of course, but it does not mean that that is the mantra that is going to be used for the purpose of attaining. He is also saying he is the taste of water. He is also saying, amongst the different planets I am the sun. He is also saying, amongst the different stars I am the moon. So there are many statements which are being made in the chapter, but the point is that the Mahamantra is the mantra which takes us all the way and gives us a relationship with Krishna whilst removing us from the modes of nature. The mode of goodness is also problematic at certain stages. It is said in Shastra, even the mode of goodness is problematic. What to say of the lower modes? So even that is condemned. So being higher at some point is also not going to solve the urge and the eagerness of the devotee. So in that sense, we can say that it does not really fit the bill.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Yes, Prabhu.
You know, you are probably tired of Gayatri Mantra, but I have a related question. Because she touched upon the status of Gayatri Mantra, how transcendental it is, as I understood the question. I wanted to clarify this. I saw long ago, but now is the chance I wouldn't bother you, but now it's like coming up with the subject. Sajjanana Maharaj drew two concentric circles in his book about chanting. And in inner circle is Gayatri Mantra, outer circle is Maha Mantra. And he like geometrically explains that Gayatri Mantra is like shortcut elevator going directly to higher stages of chanting. Without Gayatri Mantra, it's like following this ring between concentric circles, and the path is longer. And I thought to myself, I wouldn't disagree with Sachinanda Maharaj, but my mind said it's kind of might be an offense. He was kind of implying that Maha Mantra in itself is not enough for coming to the highest stages of chanting. So if you can comment on what is Maharaj saying there with this concentric circle.
I will try my best to comment on it.
Thank you.
Sure. Maharaj, I think you're referring to Maharaj's book on the Gayatris.
Chanting, but yeah.
The Gayatri. One point I do want to make is that I'm not referring to the second initiation mantras that are given in our system. I am referring to the Gayatri chanting by the Brahmana in Vedic society. So there is a distinction between the two, where the spiritual master gives us initiation in this particular, our society, for the purpose of developing consciousness for us to worship the deities. It is helpful, there is no doubt. It is helpful, but Shastra is very clear that Harinam is sufficient. Yeah, we should be very clear on that particular statement that Harinam is self-sufficient and one does not need anything else, but we do not want to minimize the system given by our acharyas because it helps us come in touch with the deities. There's Pancharatra, it helps us in the idea of coming in touch and worshipping the deities as well. So this initiation which you're talking about in the Gayatri Mantra, there are 7 Gayatris which are given. You know, he is referring to practically the second initiation process. But I'm referring to the specific Dharma Gayatri, which is chanted by the Brahmana in Vedic society, who is not engaging in Bhagavad Dharma. He is engaging in Varnashram Dharma, and he is wanting to progress further. So that's the distinction. Sure. Very good questions. A lot of reading has been done, so it looks the questions are naturally very good. Very good questions and comments. Anything else that I can assist you with? Any comment? Yes, Mataji.
I speak English not so good, but I will try.
my humble obeisances to you.
Humble obeisances to you, yes.
About feeling humbleness. This feeling is coming from the fear or not? Because sometimes I act in humbleness mood, but after that I feel very bad. And if I realize myself, I see that I'm humbleness. I'm in humbleness mood. Sometimes because of the fear, maybe humbleness is sourcing the fear or not.
Okay, so let me try and see how best to answer this question. Are you asking me a question saying, is fear making me humble?
Yeah.
That's your question. Or is it the other way around? The other way around.
Is the
humbleness make us afraid? Yeah, we want to be humble inside, where we want to understand that we are not qualified, but we have received so much, and there's a lot of gratitude. It brings about a certain quality of humbleness when we are chanting sincerely. That humility does not mean that we have to be afraid of life. We just have to be accepting internally our position and the humility of not being qualified to receive this mercy and then receiving it. So that is the first point. So sometimes by nature we could be afraid, and that fear along with humility could appear as if humility is causing fear. In reality, a devotee is fearless. The more humble they become, the more fearless they become, because the more humble they become, more Krishna comes into their life. The more humble Krishna comes into their life. When we are chanting sincerely, one becomes very compassionate and also very humble. Compassionate because they see the world suffering when they're chanting sincerely. Humble because they feel they can't do anything, because they feel they don't have power. Then Krishna helps them do things in the life. So the point I'm trying to make is, more humble does not mean fear. It should not happen. Fear is essentially a part of the material mode of ignorance. It cannot happen. When the devotee is becoming more and more humble, they become afraid. It does not happen. It is simply an issue with what they are. Sometimes devotee is very humble inside their heart. They have accepted everything which Krishna has given them. But then externally they have to be a warrior, like Arjun. Arjun was very humble. He accepted instructions. Externally he was fighting. So that is not generally connected. It is generally not connected. The best way to cure that is to attend Guru Puja in the morning. That fear will go away. You will become fearless too. Yeah. Sure. Anything else? I think we have just run over time 4 or 5 times. We have to end because devotees have to rest. They have to wake up. Srila Prabhupada ki.